Miss Flounce Luck. You never know how lucky you are until you are, and sometimes not even why. Jeremy Dorfman fully expected to fail Miss Flounce music class over the disaster at the citywide public school orchestra competition. He participated as one among the 3 third violins of the 15-member ensemble, representing PS 128, led by Miss Plaum herself. Amazed when he received an A in music on his final report card, he spent the entire summer trying to figure it out. 11 years old, stretched thinly, dark hair parted in the middle, small brown eyes behind large black-rimmed glasses, his curiosity about the behavior of adults increased daily. Pregnant women were a total mystery. How the baby crawled in puzzled him as much as how it crawled out. Or why Miss Flaum had the habit of opening her desk drawer, staring into it, sniffing, looking sad, and closing it again. And why Miss Flaum smelled fabulously on certain days, a condition he began to connect to the visits of Mr. Mannheimer, the massively corpulent supervisor of Brooklyn's music departments. Was she hoping to be recommended for a higher post by smelling better than other music teachers? Jeremy, a squirmer who could not sit still, had the opportunity on several occasions to observe them alone in Miss Flaum's office, having volunteered to distribute, collate, and file the orchestra scores before and after rehearsals.
I feel positive it will be of the utmost importance to me, as well as to you, if Brooklyn wins, Bertha. He heard Mr. Mannheimer's rolling rumble declare one day.
Jeremy was in the closet stacking the scores, the supervisor's tone suggestive, threatening, and urgent, had Miss Flaum a tremble. Miss Flaum, a vast, dark, blonde lady with wide-open purple eyes that never seemed to blink, sported as round a behind as she had a bust. Her cherubic face painted within the limits of academic policy, her natural strawberry lips luscious, her thick hair braided across her head. She wore the air of a diva. Indeed, a disappointed coloratura at 35, Miss Flaum remained single, to her dismay. Jeremy noticed her fluttering in Mr. Mannheimer's presence through fear or to attract attention or both, depending on the flutter. She had her problems with Jeremy as well, but took them in stride as any responsible teacher would toward children of his age. Until his third crushing delinquency, that is, for which she paid a high price. Jeremy, a middle-class kid, took private music lessons at home, not because he showed talent, but because it was expected of him. As one of the least of the instrumentalists in the school orchestra, he played in what he pejoratively termed the oompa section, accompanying the melodic first strings, who sat close up to the conductor's dais. Though he loved taking part in this making of music, He felt his position in the remote unit of the 3/3 violins did not fulfill his desire to shine. When he discovered an opportunity to do just that, the moment La Paloma, a piece he studied at home, became part of the orchestra's repertoire, he took it. His home composition contained all melody and no umpas. Without saying anything to anyone, he secretly brought the home version to school the night the orchestra played in the auditorium after the PTA meeting. His parents would be there, and his highly critical visiting southern uncle. He didn't want them to watch him scraping umpas. He wanted them to see him gracefully sweeping the melody along with the first violins. That was his second mistake. His first mistake had occurred a few weeks earlier in the runner-up trials against two orchestras from the Bronx. In the middle of the Brooklyn Contingent's rendition of Ave Maria, and at its most soulful moment, Jeremy's D string snapped with a powerful twang. It went off like a pistol. Miss Flaum jerked around on the podium as if she'd been shot. The orchestra flubbed the next couple of bars, but under her commanding baton and stern glare, recovered from their startled moment, ending bravely together on the same note. The applause came in recognition of their having managed to finish together beautifully, pleasing everyone but Mr. Mannheimer, who knew the judges would deduct points from Brooklyn's score. Unfortunately, at the rehearsal just prior to the competition, Miss Flaum had noticed Jeremy's string unraveling and warned him to replace it as soon as he arrived home. He forgot. That led to his second mistake, bringing his edition of La Paloma to the concert for the PTA. He placed it over the umpah music on his stand, and when the orchestra launched into it, the result left Miss Flaum in the audience shaken by what had crept into the rendition. Jeremy's La Paloma happened to be scored by a different arranger, whose notes did not conform to the notes in the orchestra's music, and in fact was in a different key. As a result, mixed in with Miss Flaum's offering, or the cries of a dying hawk, so to speak, especially since Jeremy also managed to be a few notes behind the mainstream. She accosted him the moment the performance ended. "Jeremy!" she hissed. His face blazed with guilt. She ordered him to come to her office after school the next day. There she lectured him on the orchestra as a unit dedicated to submerging its individualities, like monks, to the holy cause of music. Never having heard of monks, the image only confused him. He simply could not conceive of how the zoo came into it. She led him into an empty classroom, equipped him with a yellow pad and a pencil, and commanded him to write 100 times, "I shall never do that again as long as I live." It took him quite a while. He initially tried writing the first 3 words 100 times by themselves, thinking it might go faster that way, but it became blurrier and blurrier until he couldn't recognize the words himself and feared Miss Flaum would demand he do the whole thing over again. When he at last completed the punishment, long after school was out, he hurried back to her office. Upon timidly opening the door an inch, he heard Mr. Mannheimer bellowing. "And what is Gunther's photograph doing in your desk?" Silence. "You told me you have not heard from him for over a year."
"I told you the truth, Gerhardt. He said he was going on a secret mission for the government. He disappeared. I don't know what happened to him,"
Miss Flaum said, a catch in her voice. "He's finished. I must go back to Berlin. Schicklgruber has reorganized the party. He will be the Führer yet. You and I will be married the day after the citywide competition, when I will have the money to take you with me. That is my decision." As someone was coming down the corridor, Jeremy had to open the door, the yellow pad in his hand, and found Mr. Mannheimer seated at Miss Flaum's desk, she standing before it like a scolded pupil. Jeremy submitted his scrawls to her as Mr. Mannheimer glared at him peevishly.
"You may go home now, Jeremy," Miss Flaum said.
The finals of the New York City Public School Orchestral Competition took place the following Wednesday. The winners from each borough assembled in Town Hall. The participants assigned sections of seats in the auditorium. The first competitors, on stage, taking their places behind their music stands, tuned up. Of the five competing orchestras, Brooklyn had drawn fourth place in the order of performances. When the school from Queens, the third in line, went up on stage, Jeremy sneaked out to the men's room, his nervous stomach churning. Competition always did that to him. Sitting in the cubicle, he heard a couple of men enter the restroom and use the urinals.
"Well, Richmond and Queens are finished,"
a familiar voice exclaimed.
"The Bronx is a joke altogether. It will be between us and Manhattan, and I have already heard Manhattan."
"Is it true you bet Carter $1,000?
The second man asked, as they loudly ran the faucets in the sinks, covering Mr. Mannheimer's brief reply, but not his victorious laughter. On the podium, Miss Flaum, an inspired maestra, waved her baton passionately or with loving demand as she conducted the Brooklyn contingent to a rousing coda of the Hungarian dance. The judges, seated by themselves in the mezzanine, marked their ballots and critical comments on the performances. The final contingent from Manhattan wound up with explosive force in a march by Sousa. 100 young hearts, awaiting the decision, beat faster than the flight of the bumblebee. Randolph Comstock of the Board of Directors of Carnegie Hall announced the three winners in reverse order. The Bronx placed third. Brooklyn placed second. Manhattan won. Wild shouts of delight were underscored by a trumpet blasting a Bronx cheer. An outraged Gerhardt Mannheimer stared at Miss Flaum, rose from his aisle seat, strode backstage, and consulted with the judges on their findings. Four of the five had the same comments to make about the Brooklyn performance. Though it and the Manhattan School were tied on their ability, their performance, and their ensemble merit, failures in the Brooklyn group's understanding of how each musician's behavior affected perfection had been observed throughout their portion of the program. Both errors were made by the same student in the third violin section. First, he failed to accomplish what is basic for any perfect performance, to keep an eye on the conductor's baton to ensure ideal time with the rest of the orchestra, note for note. Second, he continually squirmed about in his seat, disturbing nearby players, scraping his chair noisily, and distracted the audience with his erratic movements, looking out at them as if seeking attention. But the judges did award Best Conductor to Miss Flaum. She never said a word about his delinquent performance to Jeremy. It came back to him from Lena, the fat pianist. Lena actually didn't convey it to Jeremy himself, but told it to Fanny, the cellist, who told it to Jeremy. Jeremy left the orchestra soon after. He nervously awaited the news of Miss Flaum's marriage and departure for Berlin. That would have relieved him of the anxiety he felt when in her music class. But it never took place. Miss Flaum went on sick leave for 2 weeks, looking pale and distracted upon her return. A spate of unconfirmed gossip drifted through the school about why she'd been out. It was attributed to the sudden departure of Mr. Mannheimer, he having without notice quit his job and left town. Rumors that he had skipped out on $1,000 debt arose, as well as his abandoning a bride at the altar, some whispered. And then, just before school closed for the summer, in a whirlwind of events so exciting that the news spread over the neighborhood in a flash, Miss Flaum had become engaged to be married. The groom, an old flame, had turned up in the nick, as Miss Flaum was said to be expiring. Had it not been for the loss of the citywide competition, Miss Flaum would have been hitched to Mr. Mannheimer and dragged off to Berlin instead of celebrating her nuptials with her beloved Gunther. Jeremy's report card, with its A in music, provided a glimmer of the complex structure of adulteries, as he understood the word. For years he pondered whether Miss Flaum's stroke of luck was attributed to him, as Lena once hinted. Even after he grew up and became an adult himself, Jeremy never fully grasped their machinations, or his own.